that we think will clarify that.
Well, let me stop just for a minute.
Okay.
I think, committee members, you can see just from the comment that Jim Gaffney made, that we have a very serious problem here. And I think that Bruce would probably agree with me that we're really re-examining the unitary method, since we have to determine, again, who is and who isn't in the unitary group. Because that's the essence of the issue. So we have to go back and look at that again. So we do need to have a lot of discussion on this.
Mr. Jim? Chair, I would put in the nature of a technical correction, and when I asked the question earlier, the answers that I received, I agree with. In other words, I think that the entities you would look at would be just within the so-called water's edge. And I think that there's agreement. It's a matter of getting the amendments drafted, which I think that we have, and it's a matter of getting them inserted into 2011. But I would put them in the technical nature. I don't think that there's as much disagreement over the concept as there is simply over whether or not the words accomplish that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Eva?
One of the questions that Representative Hamlin was asking in this context was, would our revenue people have the ability to go to the foreign corporation to examine their books, to examine arms length transactions, or to examine any type of transaction to help us make the determination of whether or not this is a unitary group? Would we have the authority to go into someone else's foreign corporation books?
Representative Hugh, I would defer to the Representative on that. As I stated before, my understanding is that they could before and can now, and it's a question of resources, I think, more than anything else. But again, I would defer to the Department on that question.
Representative Hugh, I would say that that depends on which version of the amendments you adopt. I think that if we adopt the language that's currently here, I'm not sure, the amendments that say that we only look within the consolidated group, I would say that there would be no reason to look at the foreign entities' books minutes of their board of directors, those sort of items. There would be no reason to. We would only look at those corporations that are within the consolidated group. And there are two other possibilities that I've heard mentioned. One is if we go on a worldwide basis, then I would assume that we would need to make those sort of checks of the books of the parent corporate or of the foreign corporations. The third possibility is that we confine it to a water's edge and also look at corporations that are not in the consolidated return, but that are other domestic companies that maybe, because of ownership, their ownership maybe comes between the 50% and 80% range. They're not in the consolidated return, but they are controlled corporations. So I guess it would depend on which of those versions you adopt as to where we would look to try and determine unitary ties.
To clarify then, Gary, what do we have, which of those versions do we have in the bill now?
That would be the language on page 15 of the amendments, I believe.
Which does what?
Representative, you know, the current language in the bill doesn't tell us. I guess that's the problem. It doesn't tell us which of those options. The language in the amendments, the amendments, the Dash 24 amendments, doesn't have any change. We separated those out. So on the they were separated out as a separate amendment, so the current language that are in these amendments does not have any of those three alternatives there.
Jim, what is it open? What alternative are you offering?
Representative Hugo, let me just say one thing that, in my opinion, none of the versions of the amendments that have been offered so far would restrict the department's authority to look at the books of the foreign entity. And this came up during the special session that what it would require the department to do is to require, is to rely on arm's length pricing rules between foreign entities and domestic entities, which would still, in some cases, require an examination of the books and records of the other entity. And none of the amendments that existed before that have been carried out, in my opinion, would change any of that. But notwithstanding that, the wording that we would suggest would be on page 15, line 8 of the dash 24 amendment.
Single trader business definition?
Yes. Well, first on line 8, after the word exists, to insert directly or indirectly.
Mr. Chair.
Steve Meyer has a handout that contains some language that was drafted by Elizabeth Stockdale.
Sounds right, thank you.
So to insert the words directly or indirectly in line 8 after the between the words exist and between.
I would like the department's reaction to inserting those words.
Representative Schooner, I think that I'll let Gary discuss it more. However, I'd like to tell you that we met with Richard Munn this morning on these amendments to tell him that Elizabeth and Mr. Gaffney and myself and Gary had reviewed these amendments. And Richard says basically that it is a policy decision. You know, absolutely, for the legislature, the three areas that Gary mentioned do have to be addressed. Elizabeth has said in front of the subcommittee that we will probably be in litigation if we do not get it clarified. And so we think that certainly the Dash 24 amendments are an improvement over the language that was discussed on line 9. It was just in the definition when we were in front of the subcommittee. We think that that is an improvement, definitely. But it's still a policy decision that is, you know, to be made by this committee. I would like, however, to have maybe Gary explain, after Jim completely introduces them possibly, what exactly the difference is between this one and the original amendment that was made to the single trader business definition.
Okay. Jim, do you want to discuss it more before Gary?
So, yes, Mr. Chair, let me just finish explaining or stating what the change would be. There's a second one that isn't on the list that was handed out, and in my understanding from my discussions with Elizabeth is that it was intended that these words be included as well, and I think there might have just been some confusion, although we should certainly confirm this with Elizabeth, but would be to add five words in line 9 after the word enterprise, which would be includable in a consolidated return.
That was the language that was deleted by the subcommittee.
Why?
Yeah, why did we delete those?
Well, that was the, Mr. Chair, that was the sole amendment, were those five words. My understanding is that Elizabeth was not satisfied that the so-called step transaction rule that's been developed judicially would cover all of the situations that might come up. And my understanding from talking to her is that these five words included with these other two amendments would then make her feel comfortable with the overall amendment. The two amendments that, the two changes that Elizabeth would add to the five words are the ones that are contained on the agenda.
We're going to pass out the five words, the amendments with the five words, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, as we discuss this.
While he's doing that, apparently, these amendments were just handed out. She shows down below as an alternative to line nine amendments. So these are apparently an alternative. She's suggesting to the one that we're just getting. Is that correct?
And Jim, originally we had the line nine amendments. We dropped those because Elizabeth didn't feel comfortable. She feels comfortable, in her opinion, with the line nine amendments as long as the line eight amendments and the other amendment are included.
Representative Hugo, yes, that's my understanding.
You look like you're...
That was kind of scary. That has not been part of my discussion with Elizabeth, that those words would be inserted. I do have her on call, and I could definitely call and have her speak to those issues.
Yes, would you please ask her to come over?
Okay. While we're waiting for Elizabeth, let's take a five-minute break. We'll recess for 5 minutes.
You have to go at 9:30 this morning.
A new paragraph C to the definition of single trade of business. That started out on page 15, line 8, insert directly or indirectly, and then after line 21, have new language. I talked to Jim Gaffney during the time that you were away, and I think we've come to the conclusion that there's no need to reinsert the language that was on line 9. This language will deal with the issue. I think that was the other confusion.
Elizabeth, we can't hear. Maybe it's moving like a little closer may help. I'm not sure.
Mr. Chair? We're getting bewildered by the game of musical chairs that's going on in the middle there.
That's why I'm coming close.
Mr. Chair,
Before Elizabeth goes back to the discussion again, we're talking about the amendments at page 15, is that correct? And we're talking about subsections 3A, and those new C after line 21. And I think the question I asked Mr. Gaffney before we recessed, the question was, by adding the language at line 8, directly or indirectly, and adding language at line 9, which includable in consolidated return, and by adopting the new C of line 21, Mr. Gaffney was satisfied. And his response was, yes, that'll be fine. At which point, everyone's eyes got as large as banjos and recessed. I think that's where we are. The department evidently disagreed with Mr. Gaffney. And now we're listening to Elizabeth tell us what the disagreement was and what the agreement is.
Okay, again, for the benefit of the competitors that were not here on line 8, we didn't really amend the amendments, but it was suggested that after the word exists, this is on page 15, line 8, that the words directly or indirectly be inserted.
Lost.
And then we have two sets of amendments before you, and the one that Bruce referred to is the Elizabeth Stockdale amendments that also amend on page 15, line 9, they said we include the consolidated return.
15 of amendments.
Yeah. Representative Hanlon.
May I ask a couple of questions? Perhaps of Mr. Gaffney. Are we still in the presentation?
Yes, they have not presented anything to us yet. So we started last week. Okay, we're ready to do it again.
Elizabeth Stockdale, Assistant Attorney General from the Tax Section of the Department of Justice. The two sets of amendments that you have before you were generated as a result of discussion that the subcommittee had concerning the issue of deciding when or how to decide whether two or more corporations that were included in a federal consolidated return should remain together for consideration for Oregon purposes. And the original language that was in the Department of Revenue amendments was the insertion of the words includable in a consolidated return after the word enterprise on line 9 on page 15 of your amendments. And the direction that I had from the subcommittee was that language was going to be excluded from the consolidated amendments and created as a separate amendment for discussion purposes. So that was the purpose of my preparation of that amendment. Then, following that subcommittee meeting, since there had been some differences of opinion and some problems that were raised in the discussion by the subcommittee, I conferred with Jim Gaffney about possible alternative language. And the other amendments that you have that don't have my name but do have my initials at the bottom.
This is the date of 5-16-85.
Right, it's 2011-2421, ESS 5-16-85. A little under half a page worth of material. Was developed as sort of a compromise to come up with some language that we could look at as being consistent with the policy of the bill that was established or that was adopted in the special session, but still allow for those circumstances where it appeared it would be most likely that the department ought to be able to look to corporations, the activities of corporations outside the consolidated return, that the department would be able to do that. And so I prepared this language, and Jim and I have discussed it and reviewed it several times, I think, now. And as of, a little after 10 this morning, we were both nodding our heads together saying that one set of amendments solves the issue or resolves the issue in an acceptable way.
The lengthier set.
The lengthier set. The line 9 material should not be included. The lengthier set is totally in lieu of that amendment.
Okay. Who wants to explain then the amendments? And I think that maybe for the full committee, the entire set of amendments, including the directly and indirectly, ought to be explained. Who wants to do that?
I'm prepared to do that. I'd like to just step back a little bit and remind you of the bill that was passed in the special session was to change the method of reporting of multi-state and multinational organizations that had some tax liability to the state of Oregon. Under the current system, we're using what's called worldwide combined reporting, where if there is a multinational enterprise that's being carried on by a lot of corporations, they all have to reflect all their activities and all of their income and expenses in one report, and then Oregon uses an apportionment formula to take a little tiny piece out of that pie, and they say that's the income attributable to the companies that are doing business in Oregon, to their Oregon activities, and it's the base for Oregon tax purposes. The bill that was passed in a special session changed the pie that we look at from being a worldwide pie to multinational organizations to being limited to something roughly comparable to what we call a water's edge pie. And the starting point that we focus on now is the federal tax return. And although the whole text of the bill that was passed in the special session isn't in House Bill 2011, basically what it did was say to an Oregon taxpayer, how did you file for federal purposes? Did you file a single company return for federal purposes? If you did, then you're going to use a single company return for Oregon. If you filed as part of a consolidated return because you were related by certain ownership and domicile requirements to other corporations, then you're going to bring that federal return base over as your starting point. But because there are constitutional limitations on state taxation that are not present in the federal context, we have to examine the relationships of the corporations that are included in that federal return to be sure that Oregon is not violating either due process or Commerce Clause restrictions on state taxation in using that as a base. So if we have, let's say we have three corporations in a consolidated they're all commonly owned, 80% or more, and they're all incorporated in the United States. But one of them is running a hotel, and it has no activities in the state of Oregon. One of them is running a wheat ranching operation and has activities in the state of Oregon. And one of them is running a health spa in Florida. The only Oregon taxpayer being the wheat corporation and having no unitary ties with the health spa or the hotel, we have to remove those two corporations, their income and their activities, from that consolidated return in order to comply with constitutional limitations. This amendment fits into how you make that determination, what you look at in making that determination. If you have, and Steve, can you give them that diagram? I think it'll be, it may be helpful. I hope it's not more confusing. I prepared two examples of what what kinds of relationships we might need to look at in order to make that determination of sorting corporations out of that federal consolidated return in order to get to a group that Oregon could constitutionally look to in apportioning income. And if you have an example number one involves a non-U.S. corporation, again, the two factors that are necessary to be in a consolidated federal return are incorporated in the United States and more than 80% or 80% or more common ownership. And that's all. It doesn't have to be a unitary relationship. So if you look at example number one, this is, I think, reasonable representation of a possible arrangement where a corporation that's doing business and is incorporated overseas, not in the U.S., wants to have markets open in the United States. And so it forms a holding company, a U.S. holding company, incorporates it in the United States, and owns it directly. And then that holding company forms a couple of subsidiaries. And say one subsidiary does research and development for a product, and then the other subsidiary is a marketing subsidiary. And the parent corporation has interaction by taking advantage of A's research to make its products and sells its products to B for marketing in the United States. The question that the state has to answer is, are sub A and sub B part of the same unitary business? If they are, then the base for determining if A is the Oregon taxpayer, for determining A's Oregon income, is A's and B's income and factors. If there are no direct unitary ties, no transfers of goods or transfers of services, central management and common administrative functions between A and B, and we can't look at the overall economic unit, A, B, and their ultimate parent, then A and B aren't unitary under our definition, and they file separate returns, and there's no no consideration of them together as being part of the same economic unit. Example two gives you the other problem, which is a less than 80% owned company. It's not in the consolidated return because of ownership. Again, not because of any unitary or non-unitary factors. And it would be the same kind of a circumstance where you have A and B are in the return, but the C in this example too, which is less than 80% common ownership, isn't in it, but they have an interaction. They're part of one economic unit. So the problem is, the question is, should the department, in determining what stays in the base, be able to look at relationships that are going on outside that federal consolidated return, not to tax those activities, but just to determine whether the folks that are in that consolidated return stay in one report for purposes of Oregon's figuring out what the pie is and apportioning a part of it to Oregon. The effect that the amendments will have is to allow the department to look at any activities of a corporation that's not in that consolidated return, so long as that corporation is doing business in the United States and is subject to federal taxation. So it's got the theory is that it's got enough activity in the U.S. that it's reporting to federal government agencies, and there's information here that can be obtained. In example one, the way it would work is if this foreign corporation was not operating solely outside the U.S., if it had a permanent establishment in the United States and tax here, then the department could look to those relationships between that foreign corporation and A and B and determining whether A and B were unitary. If it wasn't doing business in and taxable in the U.S., the department wouldn't be looking at that. It would only be looking at A and B and their immediate parent. In the example two, as long as sub C was incorporated in the U.S., the department would be able to look at the interactions to determine whether A and B are unitary. And that's the problem. The question does not, this amendment does not affect the determination of whether there's an ongoing transaction between an Oregon taxpayer and some other corporation for purposes of determining net income. It's only focused towards where you start as far as corporations being in a particular group and apportioning a part of that income. It doesn't go to the income base, just where the group is.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hannah.
Elizabeth. The alternate to line nine amendments, the insertion on line eight versus the insertion on line 21, I understand what you just explained, and you were explaining the effect if we adopted this alternate. My question is, can you explain how the insertion on line 8 is consistent with the insertion on line 21? At first brush, it looks inconsistent.
Okay, the consistency would be most directly demonstrated, I think, again by example 2. If you look at the very sketchy facts that I give you that create the unitary relationships between A and C and B and C are that there's management and parts made by one and financing from another, and then the product ultimately winds up in B for sale, so that the relationship between A and B is an indirect one. It's through another corporation. A direct relationship would be if A makes the parts and sells them right to B, and B puts them in the product and sells the product. I put in directly or indirectly in out of an attempt to make it very clear that indirect relationships could be considered as well as direct relationships in determining this single trader business question.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hammond.
The final sentence in that insertion, no other corporation may be taken into consideration in making such a determination, wouldn't that affect the example one situation where you have a corporation outside of the United States?
Yes, it will. And it's designed to do that.
And how will it affect that?
It will preclude the department from looking at the relationship between, if again going back to my example number one, between A and the foreign corporation and B and the foreign corporation, and trying to decide whether A and B are part of a single trader business in a unitary group. If, so long as that foreign corporation has no connection with the United States, no direct connection by itself with the United States.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hedley.
That is exactly what I understood, that we were going to get alternative to the original language embodying two policy decisions. Number one would be whether we can consider that foreign, and number two would be what appears to be here, the alternate to the line nine amendments, where we cannot consider that foreign entity for the purposes of determining a unitary group within the United States. What I perceive is presented to us today is only one of the policy options, whether it's included in the line nine amendments or the alternate to line nine amendments, if I'm understanding Elizabeth correctly. So we haven't had the other option presented to us. Unless the other, if I may follow up with another question, with the other option, i.e. leaving us with the ability to go beyond the water's edge for the purpose of determining a unitary group solely within the United States, would that be accomplished just by leaving the dash 24, page 15, as it is?
Representative Hammond, if you wanted to look at that option, I would say yes, that would do it, but with the suggestion that you still insert directly or indirectly.
On line eight.
On line eight. That if you did that, had the page 15 as it was right now with the addition on line eight, after exists of the words directly or indirectly, that then the department would, I would be able to advise the department that in applying that, they would be able to look at a total economic enterprise in determining whether any two members of a consolidated return should be treated as part of a single traded business.
Mr. Chair, I would then say that, that we have basically, all three of the line nine amendments would embody the policy that we don't go outside the United States even for the sole purpose of determining the group within the United States. And then insertion of only the first half of the alternate to line nine amendments, that is, the directly or indirectly, as the other policy. It seems to me that would be the way that we could choose to go either way.
Mr. Chair, I would disagree slightly with what Elizabeth has said with regard to the directly and indirectly language, directly or indirectly language being adequate to accomplish your other policy alternative. And in fact, it's the very point that got us started on this is that we think there would need to be even more clarification than that.